Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
All right, this is Lee Cantor here with Mr. Stone Payton. How are you doing, Stone?
I am doing well, man, and I'm feeling very jazzed about today's segment. Plus, I have a little extra energy because I am sporting my vintage microphone cufflinks.
I know. You ordered them from England?
From like Beijing or something. Yeah.
China.
So we got to get Taylor to get a studio promo shot so our listeners can see it. Absolutely. That's going to be part of the new logo, I think.
You can work on that.
But no, this is going to be a fun segment. We've got a studio full. A little bit later in the program, we're going to get a chance to visit with Larry Samuelson with the Samuelson Company, get a chance to talk with Mike Higgins with Internap and Mr. Gabe Aldridge. But first up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce President and Chair for InfoMart, Miss Tammy Cohen. How you doing?
Good morning. Great.
Well, we are delighted to have you on the show. InfoMart, tell us a little bit about this outfit and what you guys are out there trying to do for folks.
Well, we do background checks on applicants before employers hire them, doing the criminal credit driving. We service companies from the small mom and pop all the way up to the Fortune 100 worldwide.
Now, did you do a check on us before you decided to come on the show?
She wouldn't be here.
Yeah, I decided to skip that.
So it's not mandatory for every...
I wouldn't have many friends at times, you know?
So now, how'd you fall into this industry?
25 years ago, just had an applicant that took advantage of my employer and checked around and found out it was $150 to get a background check, and further found it was $5 in costs. So I decided, well, I'm going to try to do this on my own.
So so you were actually a customer of this service initially?
No, just had a mad boss that got taken by an employee.
Right. So then you researched how this works more, and then you developed a whole company around the process?
Yes, which has changed greatly. This was before email and internet. So
what was the background? So how did one go about it back then?
Back then, at the beginning, you could just call a courthouse and ask a court clerk for a criminal record.
Really? But anybody could just call?
Oh, yeah. But, you know, back then, to sell, you had to convince people it was legal to get a criminal record. So then through the years, it changed to now we have over 1,500 contractors we work with daily that go into the courthouses to do the criminal searches.
So do you look for different things for different clients, or is it pretty much here's the background package on this person and then they decide what's meaningful to them, or do you kind of help them consult?
Right, like some companies would be okay with a certain kind of criminal background.
Well, actually, yes. It depends on the job. So if somebody's an accountant, you're going to pull credit.
Right.
But if somebody is a clerk, you're not going to pull a credit report. Criminal history, everybody pretty much pulls one, but you can still have a criminal record and get a job if it's not job related.
Right.
So if somebody has petty theft and they're not around inventory or cash, then more than likely they're going to get the job.
Right.
So what if you are a prospective candidate? It looks like you've got a pretty good shot at this thing, and you know that you do have a little bit of a black mark on your record. What's the best way to manage that, mitigate the negative impact of it, and still have a decent shot at getting the job, even when it's a firm you know is going to get it checked out?
Well, first, you need to be honest and bring it up front, because that says a lot about your character.
Right.
But you've got to keep in mind that if you have, embezzlement and you're going in for a job as an accountant,
the CFO,
that's not going to happen. The child molester who goes into the toy store for a job, those just aren't good things. So
not a good fit.
You've got to get that out of your mind that is a possibility. After that, it has to be job related in order for an employer to make that decision. So be honest, tell what happens. They get the information in, they'll share it with you, and then just explain, your side and how you might have changed. Lots of times you can explain that, that happened 20 years ago, the situation. A lot plays into how old you were at the time, how many years ago. So there's a lot that plays into the decision.
Now, do you find companies are kind of forgiving, or is this like, once they have this mark, then that's game over, they don't even stand a chance, or it varies company to company?
It varies company to company, and it varies within company to company. It all goes down. Each person is an individual. Mm-hmm. So every company, you have some, you know, the big standards I told you about, but then you get into all the gray area. And the, you know, HR person or the security director will look at that person, again, how old, how many years ago, what were the circumstances.
So it's not necessarily a deal killer.
No, no, not at all.
And so do you guys have a sweet spot, an industry, or a role inside an organization that you have most of your relationships with?
Well, it depends. It usually runs in security or HR, mm-hmm. either one of those departments. You know, after 9/11, security really took it over. But after, you know, the last couple of years, the compliance that's come down the pipe, HR tends to be more involved now.
There's a lot more regulation now, right?
Oh, there's a lot of regulation to my industry. We're regulated just like a credit bureau.
Mm-hmm. So now you guys have been around a while, and you've achieved quite a bit. You're considered one of the best places to work in Georgia. Congratulations
yes.
on that.
Thank you.
So now how'd you pull that off?
Take very good care of my employees.
So what are some of the things? How'd you create that culture that your employees obviously like being there?
Years ago in my first jobs, you know, I wasn't treated well.
So you went the other. So you could have gone, you know, how people can go one of two ways. You know, they can either emulate what they had before them or they can go the complete opposite direction.
Exactly. And in the early days, I put in all kinds of weird programs and I'd get on the, you know, the SHRM boards and talk about them. And people would say, oh, you'll never make it. You'll never make it. So then I was determined to make it. So we have very unique programs. But in the long run, my tenure with my I have executives been with me over 20 years.
Wow.
My junior executives have all been with me over 10. It's actually one of the great things for my business as far as a competitive edge in that I have the most mature group of leadership in the industry.
So now, what are some of the programs, the innovative programs that you put in place, or is that top secret?
Oh, no. I love to share all the things we do. Well, we have these what we call I Am programs. So we have I Am Fit, for instance.
So I Am?
I Am, capital I and uh-huh. capital M for InfoMart, but okay. for the person,
right. uh-huh.
I am fit. I like
and
it.
And so I Am Fit. We do, you know, of course, The Biggest Loser, and we're in teams right now. My team is Sassy by Summer, and we've been working on that. After winning the best place to work, you know, I had to up my game. So I went out there to see what was interesting out there, and so right. we started the standing desk. So as of about 6 weeks, I have been standing, and wow. now we have standing desks out on the operational floor. And
any treadmill desks?
No, I haven't gone there yet.
Does that really exist, a treadmill?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. They're expensive, so I have 100-plus employees, so I have to keep things in mind what we can possibly
do. So you've raised
everyone.
The desks up to where everybody stands? Got rid of the chairs?
Well,
you put those balls there, Swiss balls?
No, those don't work. We've tried those out. We actually went, you know, they're like $600 to $800 a desk.
Right.
So
wow.
we actually have developed our own through IKEA. So we're about $125, $150 a desk. So it's interesting, but you have to commit, and that's you have to either sit or you stand. You still get a chair, but you have to commit because you only still get one computer, and that's for me as well. So
right.
it's a different experience.
So the employees like that? They're all right with that?
They are. It's a transition we're making. You know, you first go through the whole I'm sore, this hurts. Then you go through
You're like, I didn't realize I had so many muscles.
Exactly. And it's not your feet. And then it's the, you know, accidentally going to sit in your chair and jumping back. I'm like, I got to do it. But I think the greatest thing we have found is you're much quicker on your feet and your mind. It's amazing the productivity, how much faster you operate when you're standing on your feet.
Because humans are meant to move, I think, not to sit for, you know, 8-10 hours a day.
Yes.
You'd think.
You would think.
So did you guys take a hit with the recession, or is your business kind of like liquor and tobacco, that's when you need it the most?
No, we took a big hit. We are, you know, closely related to hiring. But, you know, being in the industry for 25 years, I had a little bit of an edge on sort of knowing the ebb and flow of my business. But one of the cool things that we did is instead of the corporate retreat for, you know, $30,000, we brought all the managers and we had the old-timey lock-in like you'd used to do at the churches.
Right.
We locked all the employees in. We brought air mattresses. And we went through every payable. We went through every receivable. We analyzed the profit on every client. And it was amazing. After a long weekend, we came out with about $2.5 million of just waste.
Really?
Yes, and game plans on how strategies. So we have still profited and grown year after year, even in the recession. But a good bit of that was, you know, and all the employees jumped in. You know, no more, you know, plant service and accounting made us go down to cheap coffee and.
You know. Well, I don't think we would have made that sacrifice.
We won't. That's a bridge too far for us. So now. That's pretty innovative by itself to kind of have this kind of a lock-in kind of situation. So your employees are all on board. They're all in this. You're all in this together, and you all feel like you're kind of a family. And that's amazing that you're able to get that kind of buy-in.
Well, you know, when I was growing up, you had your church to fall back on. You had your family's friends. Your
right.
family had people don't have that anymore. They don't live near their family.
Right.
They're not involved as much in the community and the church. So, you know, I'm the net. So, you know, you've got a problem in your life, whether it's personal or, you know, medical, whatever it might be. I'm there for you. And, you know, that pays off in the long run because my employees stay.
But now that sounds like your own kind of personal involvement individually that isn't.
Nah, I don't like to hear about all that stuff. It gets depressing at times.
But there must be some sort of that your employees feel open to share that with the managers and other people in the company.
They do. They sort of know the path of where you go. You know, I have
right.
this need, and it gets to the right people, and the right people know.
And then they take care of the person.
Yes.
Wow, that's great.
So how do you go to market? How do you get on the radar of these companies that need your services? They knocking on your door? You got folks reaching out to them? How does that work?
I would love for them to just all be knocking on my door. But, you know, it's organic growth. We don't lose our clients. I have many of my same clients from 20 years ago. You know, we morph and flex to what the client needs. And one moves, we pick them up. We go to a few trade shows. That was something that we cut out. We used to go to 30 a year, and
wow.
we're down to like 5 a year. We looked at the best ones. So just the typical small to mid-sized type of marketing.
Now, what's the pain that they're having? They're about to go on a hiring binge where they're hiring a bunch of people, so they need you to come in, or it could be just one at a time? Like, what's the pain that the customer's having?
Well, the customers is right now is just, you know, being able to bring new people on. But we do everybody that a customer brings on, everybody they hire. It's a policy that you have to do it on, you know, everybody that walks in the door. A lot of companies now, though, since they're using the contingency workplace, the temporary agencies, we do it through the temporary agency for them. So
You work with, so the client might be the temporary agency, mm-hmm. not the actual client, you know, the company that the employee goes to?
Exactly. So Randstad, we do everybody that they place in any company.
Mm-hmm.
So
no wonder you have 100 people.
So, yes, that keeps us very busy.
And then you know when the economy's picking up, right? When your business is picking up, that's kind of a signal that maybe things are turning around?
It is. It is. When things started getting slow at my business, I had a feeling that this was not going to be good. So I was very fortunate to come in, and I did lay off people, but I did it a little early, and I did a large amount at one time.
Uh-huh. And then you can see that when, like, the companies are going more to this contract worker rather than putting the headcount on their own?
Yes, yes.
And then so you still can play because you're working with that temp agency?
Oh, yes. But, you know, our employers are not hiring more right now.
Mm-hmm.
Our growth has been basically taking more market share.
Right.
So, no, hiring is not up right now.
Right, but contract workers are there.
It's up. The contingency worker
right.
is up compared to what it used to be.
So what's next for you guys? Where are you going to be putting most of your energy in the coming months, you think?
Well, for this year, our focus is going to be on a healthy work site. Last year, we put a community garden out, and we're going to expand that. My focus is on these programs for my employees because they're trained. They handle the clients. So
Right. It's
going to be focused on that and some more different type of social media, type of marketing strategies, which maybe we'll learn more today about.
I'm sure we will.
Well, it has been an absolute delight having you in the show this morning. Before we wrap, first of all, I want to say I want you to come back because I want to talk about trade show strategy, and I want to talk more about what you learn with your social media. So we got to have you back. But let's make sure that our listeners have your contact information so they can reach out and have a conversation with you about these services.
My name is Tammy Cohen, and it's InfoMart, and you can get a hold of us at backgroundscreening.com.
Outstanding. Hey, listen, how about hanging out with us for a little bit while we visit with our next guest?
Would love that.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have with us from InterNAP, Mr. Mike Higgins. Welcome to the show, man.
Good morning, Stone. Morning, Lee. Thanks for having me.
Well, we are glad to have you. You seem to be very attentive. I even saw you nodding a little bit. I saw you writing notes. I don't know if it was on Tammy's comments or if you were just getting ready to have this conversation, but we're delighted to have you in the studio. InterNAP, we've seen you guys at a few of the trade shows, conferences that we've been at.
Some of the technology.
Remember the one guy dressed up like a Superman or something? Maybe you can tell us what that's all about.
That was me, and I lost the bet.
So what do you guys do?
So let me tell you about InterNAP. We're actually about a 500-person global company. We're actually based right here at the perimeter, and we are publicly traded. We've been around since 1996, and we provide IT infrastructure services to small, medium-sized companies. We do have larger clients as well. And, you know, most exciting about us is the company made a transformation about 3 years ago. We were a network-based company that moved into the data center services space. And this space, and I'm sure you've heard the buzzwords, but we are focused trying to keep up with our customers' growth, but it's all about what goes on in the data center today. And I'll talk more about that specifically with you guys.
So you guys are working in the cloud now?
We are working in the cloud. We basically offer customers what we call a hybrid environment. So mm-hmm. what makes us kind of unique in the data center space is customers usually make outsourcing decisions. They look at it really three different ways. One, they would hear the term co-location, where they bring their servers to your physical environment,
right,
and they want to host them there. We also offer hosting services. We're in the same data centers. We'll lease the infrastructure to the customer. And most recently, within the last 12 months, we made a cloud acquisition, and we acquired a company that provides cloud
services.
So now
you have a cloud.
So now we have a cloud. And when we talk to customers in the data center space and they're making outsourcing decisions, you know, what's interesting about us is CTOs, CIOs are looking to make decisions today, and they're looking to make them 2 or 3 years from now. And so they see an environment where they have servers today that they'd like the environment or the option or the alternative to maybe virtualize that over time.
Right, so, and you give them any choice they'd like, right?
We give them all three flavors.
Right.
And we have been expanding aggressively here the last 3 years. We now have over 1 million square feet of data center space around the country. And we've been opening up a data center a year in a new market.
Does it matter, like, the distance from your business from where the data center is?
So the real, it's a great question. So
it was all right. The question was okay. It was appropriate.
So what's interesting, it does matter. Latency is a big issue for customers mm-hmm. and applications, and particularly very what I'll call strategic e-commerce applications, whether it's trading, gaming, where those customers are looking for instantaneous events. And InterNAP's heritage actually was a network-based company where we actually buy internet capacity from all of the major providers with some proprietary software that lets us route optimize that traffic.
Right.
So that's a big deal for customers, and latency is really, you know, one of their major concerns when making a data center decision.
Mm-hmm.
You guys have had a couple of really good years because with all this acquisition, it's not like you're bleeding cash. You guys are having really high performing revenue years that you've cracked the code on this thing.
So
you got to share the secret?
Well, it's a lot of hard work. it's a big space. So the you know, the industry, if you look at the data center space, is somewhere around $35 billion. I mean, it's a huge market space. So that means there's lots of competition, lots of players.
Sure.
So we have been growing. We have been improving EBITDA. InterNAP has been reporting record EBITDA growth here for the last number of quarters. So it has been a good story. And integrating the platforms and, you know, creating the space for the customers is it's a big key. And it's not only creating the environment, but as the environment changes, power becomes a big issue as we move forward. So if you guys just think about what used to sit in the data center as related to the larger servers, and now what customers bring to the data center are literally, they could be pizza boxes,
right?
Blade servers, and they take a tremendous amount of power and cooling. So it's kind of a, you're building an environment that's looking at today and it's looking at 3 and 4 years ago, because customers, once they bring that gear and infrastructure to the data center, they really don't want to move. It's a sticky customer.
Sure.
So you need to make sure you're building a data center that can, you know, have sufficient power and space for customers.
And then grow with the customer.
Grow with the customer.
Now, how are you seeing Atlanta in the scope nationally as a technology center?
So Atlanta is growing very quickly. It's a real good story. We just did an expansion downtown at 250 William Street. We opened up our second phase of a 40,000 square foot phase data center. And Atlanta is attractive for lots of reasons. Believe it or not, that large airport you go through with all those concourses.
That's helpful, right? That international airport.
It's great for customers.
Right.
The proximity to downtown is very good coming from our airport. And there's tremendous amount of fiber in the ground downtown. So the ease of getting to Atlanta is good. And there's two other significant things that customers look at in Atlanta. So one is the power cost. Atlanta has very reasonable power cost, very reliable grid. And then the other thing is, you know, when customers make data center decisions, they look at things like weather, you know, what kind of a, what's the zone the country's in, tornado zone, hurricane zone. You know, we all went through Hurricane Sandy.
Sure.
Atlanta is a very friendly climate environment for the data center space. We don't have hurricanes. We don't have really a lot of bad weather. Therefore, customers don't have to think about earthquakes and things along those lines when they make decisions. And you combine that with our airport and our power cost and the fiber, and it's growing very, very quickly. Probably the top three cities in the country as far as growth right now.
Really?
In the data center space.
Now, is there any impact in your business? I know we're trying to become a little bit of a gaming center. Are you seeing any of the benefits of that?
Absolutely. So the gaming customers are actually very large customers for Internet.
I would think so.
So, you know, there's a large game called League of Nations. Maybe you guys are familiar with it, where there's users around the world. And that customer for us, we host their infrastructure, not only here in the U.S., but in Europe as well. So the gaming vertical is very strong for us. And again, it's all about latency. And, you know, they want the flexibility to add infrastructure as they see it. So they have flavors and options to do that.
Now, when they're a customer of that size and have kind of these needs that are extremely robust, do you sit down with them? Are you involved in like kind of strategic thinking for them and become kind of a partner with them in this area?
It's all about partnerships.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, customers will grow up and they may need a different environment. We may not be the best fit for them. We
right.
may have been the right fit for them coming out of the gates. So it's all about sitting down and, you know, for us, it's optimizing the right environment for the customer, whether it's co-location, hosting, or cloud services.
Right, and but now it seems like you're covering all the bases, so you can help them in a lot more ways than you could maybe, you know, a few years ago.
We in the last 2 years have made significant investments in our portfolio to provide those options that we
right.
didn't have 2 years ago. We were very focused on the co-location front, which is a very strong front, still growing, but the addition of adding hosting and cloud services has made us extremely viable to the customer with those options for where they can grow.
Now, when you were making that kind of strategic decision, were you involved in that?
We were, as a senior team, yes.
So now there's some risk involved. That's not, like, in hindsight, it looks like, oh, that was an obvious decision, right? Right? But there was some people were on the other side of the argument, right?
Yeah, it's interesting. So, you know, having some gray hair, being around some M&A in my lifetime, it is always you run that risk. Fortunately for us, we have a very strong senior team that looked at the opportunities for us in this particular product offering, and we could see very quickly how it complemented
right.
our existing services. And I will tell you to that point, it's a great question. Coming out of the gates, you know, we let them operate as a standalone entity and then slowly integrated first, you know, throwing them into the mix day one and running the risk of losing those synergies and, you know, losing that product niche that they were getting market share.
So you mentioned earlier on hurricanes, you talked about weather and us being in a great place, but disaster recovery, mitigation of loss, and maybe getting the latency out of the equation altogether, that's an important aspect of the service that you provide. Is that accurate?
Absolutely. So we, of course, we're based in New York, like a lot of companies, because there's a tremendous opportunity in that marketplace. Post-Hurricane Sandy, we've had a number of conversations with our customers that,
I'm sure he had some phone calls.
you know, believe it or not, we had customers that they did have disaster recovery, but it was in New Jersey, and their primary was in New York, so that really didn't work. So now with the introduction of cloud services and looking at other, our other locations around the country, whether it's Dallas or Seattle, and, you know, creating those standalone disaster recovery right. opportunities and putting those customers with their backup services there has actually been a great opportunity for us and really for the customer because they weren't contemplating, you know, what a Sandy event could do to their business.
Right, so that New York, New Jersey plan's kind of been rethought.
Huh? It's pretty interesting, actually, to hear customers talk that way, but yes. So we've tried to remediate for them as best as possible.
Just like you don't have a Decatur Smyrna plan, right?
We don't have a Decatur Smyrna plan, no.
It's much less expensive. Right. It's the entry-level plan. So you guys have been recognized for having green design and ops yes. for your data centers. And forgive me for being a little bit skeptical, but at first blush, to me, that doesn't seem like a terribly difficult feat. But explain that to me.
So it's interesting. So you'll hear terms like LEED certification. That's a green term. And when Internap 3 years ago started building these larger data centers, and, you know, we're a small, medium-sized company, we were looking for all the, I'll call the energy efficiencies we could find that we build. And so what ends up happening is you spend time, for example, with the local power companies when you're building in Texas or California. And what they offer you is, hey, there's a lot of energy efficient equipment. And if you go down these streets and you put this in your data center, because they're obviously very concerned about power usage and, you know, what it means to the grid. So working with them to use energy efficient equipment helps us earn rebates, tax incentives. So it works for the state. It works for Internap. And then on top of that, we just start looking at things like where you place the data center, access to public transportation. We've been very conscious to recycle materials. So we're doing all those things, and it's helped us tremendously. We use, for example, in Los Angeles, we use outside air to cool the data center because of the climate out there. And so that's a very energy efficient green thing that you're not running air conditioning units 7x24. You're actually taking in outside air to cool your data center.
Right.
So there's some interesting things.
Well, you've opened my eyes because that's real impact. Because I'm thinking, well, they're already not spilling oil.
It's their AC bill. That's there.
Well, no, this efficient power and putting them in proximity to public transportation using
absolutely.
It. I mean, that has real impact.
Absolutely.
So I appreciate you cleaning that up.
And then you guys were also named one of America's most trustworthy companies. How'd you pull that off?
Yeah,
trustworthy? Who decides that?
The guy drips integrity. Look at him.
I didn't even know there was an award for trustworthy.
You know, what's interesting is we score very high on customer satisfaction surveys,
right.
third-party peer analysis. One of the big advantages of a company like Internap is that when a customer has a question, something happens, their environment's not working, we have a NOC, Network Operations Center, with certified engineers that we all go through this. You know, you dial your bank, you get, you know, 1-800, press 1,
right,
press
right.
2, press 3. You dial the NOC at Internap, you get a certified engineer within...
A human
nice.
Being that can service and support your issue. And usually 80% of the time they can cure very quickly
wow.
about your problem. So that's how we become trustworthy.
Huge.
Customer support is
especially in
bad.
This world, you know, a lot of these technology companies think that the customer likes going through phone trees, you know, and pressing 14 buttons, you know, to get a yes or no answer.
And that's a differentiator for us because there's a lot of players in the market.
Right.
So you want to, you know, service is obviously big.
Right.
And talking to an engineer when you're not getting the performance on your application is critical. Yeah.
So, and you guys have some pretty big math brains on staff that really do help the client and the prospective client think through their ROI, their return on investment. Speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, I will. So we do have a very good consultative engineer. So today's Valentine's Day.
Yes.
So one of our largest customers is Vermont Teddy Bear.
Okay.
So it's a very consultative sale for us. So spike seasonal business. So they look at our product offerings, and obviously in the month of January, early February, they're looking for additional infrastructure.
That's right.
Because you and I and everybody else is looking at those bears.
Whoa.
And, you know, we don't want to be in trouble tonight. So that's an example where we do a consultative sale. We enhance their environment, and they spin up additional infrastructure.
Right, and then you can kind of pull back.
Then we pull back once we get to tomorrow, and they then run on more of
a normal
pace.
Right.
So those are examples of customers that, you know, we look at that, and it's a very consultative environment, as you can imagine, to, you know, get the right solution for the customer.
Now, is there a point where a company should, like, what should be the thought process when they're on the fence about considering the cloud or not?
So the cloud is an interesting, it's an interesting topic, good buzzword, been around for a while. So the cloud services where we see customers occupy it or operate it the most is what I'll call, it's an agile or it's a virtual environment, it's a test environment. They're not ready to make an infrastructure decision on buying X amount of servers, and they may not have the security concerns, and they're really running beta programs that, you know, they need capacity, but they may need it for 6 hours. They may need it for 30 days. They could need it for longer, but it's usually what we call our hosting, our cloud product, an agile product, because it is meant, you know, if you think about it, it's kind of a just in time.
Right, it's got to flex when you need it. You get more of it, and it goes down.
It's exactly what it is. It's utility. It's a utility product, right? It's like using power.
Right.
So when you need it, you
it's
turn
there?
It up. When you don't, you turn it back.
Right.
So, and what it should lead to is, as their applications are successful, then they build a more robust environment and they grow. So, again, that's the advantage of, you know, permanent infrastructure versus standing up environments
agile,
just in time. Yeah.
So what's the best way for our listeners to learn more about this? Get some coordinates, website, email address, private phone number, all that stuff.
So the best way to learn about us is internap.com.
Uh-huh.
And look at the website, look at the products and services, you know, expansive data center offerings, geographic reach around the country, around the globe, and again, built on service, built on support. So that would be the best way to reach us through internap.com.
I got to tell you, you must just have a ball doing this work. I can just tell how much you enjoy it. I mean, you really do, don't you?
So I actually speak a lot. I do go around and talk about Internap to other, you know.
That's part of your role.
It's part of my role.
Right.
Just helping us get the brand out, get the message
the out,
help
that's
people
it.
Learn what we're doing.
That's fantastic.
So.
Well, I think it would be fun to have you come back sometime with a client.
Love to.
Maybe you can bring that cloud with you.
Yeah,
I'll bring it with me.
Well, thanks so much for coming down and visiting with us this morning, man.
Yeah, thank you, Lee. Thank you, Stone. I really enjoyed it.
You going to hang out with us while we visit with our next guest?
Absolutely.
Fantastic. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have with us from the Supergroup, Mr. Gabe Aldridge. Welcome to the show, man.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Well, you've been very polite.
Did you learn anything, Gabe?
Yeah, what'd you learn?
Well, I learned that it's Valentine's Day,
which
is important.
It's a little late for that.
I'd like to let everyone at the table know that my love for you is unique, even though there wasn't a card involved. So
I'm sure you guys are doing super work. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, thank you. We are doing super work. I guess as the name perhaps implies, the super group, you know, we kind of think of ourselves, we honestly think of ourselves as a really awesome band. Which is perhaps not exactly the business terms you were looking for, but we are a broadly talented creative agency. We're based in Atlanta. We do a lot of work in Atlanta. We do a lot of work, you know, all over the nation and all over the world.
So that would explain the mustard pants, the creative
mustard pants.
Angle.
You got to look the part, right?
You got to look the part,
right? Yeah.
Mustard pants inspire you. I'm going to recommend them to everyone
the
here.
Hipster glasses, right?
The hipster glasses. I got these in India, in Old Delhi.
Of course.
Had to charm a snake to get them. But
so you guys are a creative agency, right? You do What kind of work?
Well, we do, as I was saying, we do a pretty broad range of stuff. I mean, we do a whole lot of interactive creative, but we also do a lot of traditional creative. Mm-hmm. You know, we work for companies like various Johnson & Johnson brands, Listerine.com, others in oral health.
Did you do that little corner that comes up on, you know, when you see an ad on TV, that little corner comes up for Johnson & Johnson? You know what I'm talking about?
Did we
about?
Do that?
Yeah, did you do that? Just say yes. They
I think
probably.
So. I think so. I wasn't my team.
No, it's very distinctive. Sure you know what I'm talking about, Lee? No. At the end of every Johnson & Johnson ad, it says we're a family company, and the little bottom right-hand corner flips up.
Like you can turn the page.
I bet you Gabe did it.
Supergroup. TM. So with Johnson & Johnson, we do a lot more traditional work, be it packaging design, secondary packaging design, as well as, magazine ads, even things as boring.
Print ads?
Print ads.
They still exist?
They do. They really? Still exist. Yeah, as long as we're asked, we'll do them. we even do coupon design,
really?
Whatever our company, whatever our partners need.
If the check clears, you do it.
Pretty much we won't. What we won't do is porn.
Got it.
Because no one wants that.
No,
well, and they don't need it.
Porn coupons.
Porn coupons. Oh, that's an amazing idea. I guess I'll let you keep it, but okay. I do so begrudgingly.
So now, have you always been in this creative industry?
Yeah, we've been around for 10 years, and this has basically been what we've been doing all along.
Right. So you've been in this advertising marketing space.
Pretty much. Yeah. I mean, we don't do only traditional type advertising. We do a lot of, as I said earlier, a lot of interactive work, be it for Johnson & Johnson or other groups like we work with, Coca-Cola, Disney, and we've
So
all,
to describe an interactive project, I'm having a little trouble getting my
media
arms around.
Social media, certainly. We do a lot of social media what I call social media content creation, where we're not the folks that are like managing your social media communities or monitoring Facebook feeds or responding to any kind of, Facebook emergency. But we're going to create the stuff that will actually make people talk about you. Like, for instance, we did a project with a PR agency in Atlanta. Ketchum PR had an office in Atlanta. And this was for 7-Eleven, and they had a new line of Brazilian coffee they wanted to begin offering. It was gourmet, and they were going to compete with like BP's AMPM stores.
Right.
And they had a tagline, "Wake up with a hot Brazilian," which we thought was great. And
Larry likes it.
And they needed help in kind of bringing that to life in the digital space. And they brought us in to help ideate and expand their ideas and actually design and then implement the final product. Where the final product basically was a. Have you ever seen that site Leisure Suit Larry?
That game from like 30 years ago.
Yeah, from like 30. I'm reaching back vintage.
Yes.
Well, this was kind of an expanded version of that. It was set in a kind of fictitious club, the 7-1-1 Club,
nice.
On Copa Beach in Rio, and you had to. Basically, there were six people you could pick up, three guys and three girls. You had to introduce a pickup line. You had to actually dance. So there was like a Guitar Hero or Dance Dance Revolution style game you had to play. And then actually carry on a long conversation. And as you had success, you had to make sure that you're doing the right thing for the right personality, because each of the six people had very distinct personalities.
Uh-huh.
You would get mojo points if you came. If you got enough mojo,
cool,
you pop the question of, "Hey, let's get out of here." Then you would wake up with a hot Brazilian. I'm making air quotes for those listeners.
They can see that.
And what you would so at the end of the game, if you won, the scene faded up, and on your bedside table was a hot steaming cup of delicious 7-Eleven Brazilian coffee.
That is interactive. I get it now.
You get a coupon at that point to try a free cup, a real cup, not a digital cup. And it ended up being, just to give a quick metric, of all the promotions to drive trial like that 7-Eleven had ever done, digital or traditional, it had the highest rate of coupon return. So, highest rate of coupon redemption, I guess. So that's a long example of a creative interactive project where we came in to kind of be a boost to an agency or a client's existing powers, using gaming terminology.
Now,
with that power up for you.
Now, that's a great story. Now, when you're trying to sell that into a company, especially kind of a big corporate-y company, and you're telling them it's kind of like Leisure Suit Larry and you're going to play off the Brazilian kind of double entendre thing, and are they just like, wow, that's a fantastic idea. I love taking risks like that, and that's not going to offend any of our clients. Let's go for that. And then they have no idea if this is going to work or not, right? Like, well, do you test this at all, or you just go boldly forward and just say, trust us, and they're like, yeah, that sounds good, Gabe. You're the super group. We're going to just go for this.
Well, we do. We do get given we're given a lot of trust by our clients. That's, you know, for better or for worse.
Right.
And we've not let a single one of them down.
You're undefeated.
We're undefeated so far. And, you know, in all fairness, the wake up of the hot Brazilian line, you know, the raciest part, it was actually not even – no, it wasn't our idea.
I know. They, so they're on the hook for that. So you guys are – your hands
are
clean.
We're just on the hook to make it, to bring it to life.
Right. But this sounds like – I mean, I'm a big company. I can understand smaller companies being more nimble and taking shots like this. But a big company kind of going all in with this Leisure Suit Larry game, that sounds – you know, that's a good salesmanship to pull that off.
Yeah, I mean, you got to take risks to get noticed. I mean, and I think people, maybe I guess certainly those risks need to be calculated. But, you know, that's, I commend 7-Eleven.
Right, but did you show them a bunch of stuff and they chose this one?
Well, Ketchum came to us with basically the idea of, you know, we'd like to do a dating site like this.
Right.
We came back with ways of improving that. And then, you know, we had some other ideas, but they wanted to stick with that original vision.
Right.
And,
so you worked within their vision, and then you executed this game for them.
Yeah.
And then it got tremendous results.
Yeah.
So you mentioned the word ideate or ideation a little earlier in the conversation. Do you actually have at Supergroup a structured methodology for generating ideas, harvesting them, choosing the ones you're going to use, stockpiling the others? Or is it just kind of free-flowing, everybody's playing Nerf basketball, and it just pops out?
Not a single Nerf basketball hoop in the place. Although, you know, I mean, we do have a process. It's not one that we map out in five easy steps, but rather, you know, I guess our creativity comes from, I don't know, a love of, and this will sound weird at first, a love of fantasy and adventure, and a celebration of fantasy and adventure, you know, pretty much 24/7 at Supergroup. Our offices, you know, we're not just the typical creative agent that has an office that has a, you know, beanbag chairs in the corner and a foosball table in the break room. Our office actually looks like a set of a 1970s sci-fi movie. And then we just did an expansion. Go online at thesupergroup.com and you can see some photos. We just did an expansion, which you don't have photos up yet. And that we actually walk inside, and it looks like you've walked outside at night. Onto a beach in Bali, like kind of Balinese.
So you have sand?
We do have sand, and we have and we have a working fountain that flows over this ancient temple.
We're
wall.
Doing a remote broadcast from their office. Yeah, we have right. to.
We also have a full bar, if you'd like.
I like
to,
it.
You know, that could enhance the remote. But all that, you know, all that's to say
so
is that
no cubicles.
No cubicles.
It's a cubicle-free zone.
It's a cubicle-free zone. And, yeah, we feel that those type of surroundings really inspire that creativity.
Right.
Our brainstorm sessions are, you know, we invite everyone. Some of our best ideas come from our accountant and our salespeople.
Let's not get carried away.
Well, it's true. I have to give them hats off. But, you know, a lot of the brainstorming session is there's a lot of joking, a lot of laughing, but invariably, the best ideas come up when you're honestly not focusing on, we got to come up with our best ideas, guys. You know, we have a full arcade, a full vintage arcade inside, and some of my best ideas have come playing Tempest. When your mind isn't focused on the, you know, it's a Zen trick. Your mind isn't focused on the task at hand, expressly, but you're in a creative environment and you're doing something creative. Playing a game is creative, and it kind of, you know, fuels that you know passion from within, and that it ends up, you know, bringing a steady stream of great ideas, and that's what we try to just nurture that environment so that creativity is not something that has to happen on the clock, but happens all the time.
Now, if somebody wanted to work there, what's a good employee profile?
Yeah, how do you find that guy?
Because I'm about to hand you my resume.
You about to jump ship?
Well, hey, look, all of you look wonderful, and you're all hired. I'll have to just get that approved by the board. But, well, I mean, you know, honestly, a lot of folks who work with us come from entertainment backgrounds, but that's not exclusively
like
so.
Radio hosts.
like radio hosts. There you go. You know, a lot of the core members of the supergroup, you know, came from, you know, bands. You know, in fact, we considered calling the super not really, but we joked about considering calling the supergroup Valid Plan B. Because when we all realized
I like it.
That we were not going to be superstars, you know, soon, maybe eventually. Needed to, you know, have a plan B.
Plan B, there you go.
And a lot of the stuff we did in bands, you know, creating a band right. is a brand, making websites, videos, flyers, designs, all that really applied to the marketing world. It's like, huh, I do have skills. And, so a lot of folks from that kind of background fit in well, but that's not, you know, true across the board. I think that everyone at the supergroup kind of has the ability to write their own ticket. They're obviously hired because they have skills. They're creative. Honestly, they're hired because they show that they're willing to evolve and learn. So you come in and you find out that you have this freedom to pitch an idea, you know, to come to me and my partners and say, I want to explore this area. I want to try this new experiment. You know, that's something that can happen. So if you want to come to a supergroup, come with some ideas, because if you're not presenting stuff, I don't know. You're probably not the right guy, so or gal.
So you got to. Your ideation is that the word?
Let's go with that.
That sounds like a consulting word.
It's $5 word.
It's a $5 word. That's a $25 word. Now, so in your future, what's happening with you guys? What do you guys got next up?
Well, let's see. We're doing a lot more in the actual physical. World, you know, physical.
You know, you're leaving
nowadays.
The.
Leaving the mic. Sorry.
You're leaving the mic.
We're doing a lot more in the physical space nowadays. Where we're actually doing, you know,
Have you done a billboard?
I've done a billboard.
Have you?
We actually have. We did the NASDAQ billboard for actually another Atlanta company called TRX. Uh-huh. When they went public, we did the billboard work for them.
So you've done a billboard. You've done TV commercials.
We have. Well, we've done commercials that are internet related, internet. You know,
so you've done video.
We do most of what we do ends up having a video element, like that project for 7-Eleven. Mm-hmm. It was all video. Mm-hmm. We had to work with, you know, had to deal with issues of streaming, streaming HD video. So we have
I know a cloud guy if you need one.
where is it? Oh, there he is.
Well, I'll tell you, the supergroup sounds like super fun. One last question before we wrap up. Let's turn the table a little bit. When someone is preparing to hire creative, what kind of questions, big company or small, what kind of questions should we be asking? What should we be looking for? Red flags, green lights?
Yeah, red flags would be prepackaged solutions from a creative company. People who come with services they're already selling. It's like, I think that a good creative agency should be kind of agnostic in a sense. They should know that, look, I want to listen to what your goals are, and let you know where I really think the best success can be had. You know, what media we should use, even down to what language this program should be written in, and to be able to be agnostic in that constructive kind of way, you've got to have a broad range of skills, and you've got to be able to know that this would be instead of writing that site in Drupal, we should use Django, this probably is better HTML5 than Flash, you know, things like that on the interactive side. But, you know, not having to sell what you already sell to a client, you know, having that freedom to actually pitch what will work and what will work best, I think is something that you should really look for when you're hiring a creative agency. Or just call us.
Save a step.
That seems like the simple thing to do. Well, let's make sure that they can call us. What is the number and other coordinates to get in touch with you?
All right, our fax number, 404. It's we love vintage stuff. The supergroup.com is a great place to learn more about us. You're welcome to email me, supergabe@thesupergroup.com. 404-877-1711, and Hal the robot will answer the phone for you.
Fun stuff. Thanks for coming down,
yeah,
man.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, hang out with us while we visit with one last guest, will you?
I could think of nothing better.
All right. Well, Lee, bringing it home for us on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, we have trusted advisor Larry Samuelson from the Samuelson Company. Welcome to the show, man.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Well, you have been very patient, very polite. You've nodded your head a lot. You've smiled. And now it's your turn.
The spotlight's on
the
you,
the spotlight
buddy.
Is on you, man.
You know, Gabe is a tough act to follow.
Yeah, I know. I was thinking that. They all have been so far. But trusted advisor, this is something, these are not just words to you. This really means something to you, this phrase, trusted advisor. Tell us a little bit about that and the work you're doing.
What a trusted advisor is, and I guess it's probably helpful to talk about what a trusted advisor isn't. It's not a consultant, a certified coach or trainer, or anybody with a strictly HR function. What it really is somebody that has extensive business experience working at a senior level and is a skilled business generalist who can provide business owners and executives with advice, expertise, direction, and acumen to help them make decisions.
He's answered that question before.
You think? So now, are you a trust advisor or you help me find one?
I am a trust advisor. And I can help you find one also.
Not both. Now, what's your background that gives you kind of the right to call yourself a trust advisor?
I've been in the business, automotive aftermarket business for 40 years. And most of what I did, I was at a senior level, but where I spent most of my time, probably 70%, was working one-on-one with our owners who are also our customers.
Right.
And helping them, identify challenges, solve them, work through what their strategy was going to be to grow their business. And so when I retired from Genuine Parts after 35 years, I just continued doing what was effectively trusted advisor work at that time, and that's what I'm still doing now.
Now, did you see these small business owners or business owners making similar mistakes, or do you see the same mistakes cropping up over and over again?
I think the toughest thing to do in the U.S. is be a small business person, because you've got a relatively small staff, you're trying to make a lot of decisions, you're trying to do a lot of things, you're multitasking. And what I find, and this is going to sound strange, is that a business person, even of a mid-sized company, a lot of times needs someone to talk to who's got the business experience and acumen before he's really ready to do something or announce it to his people. Mm-hmm. You can say before it's ready
like
for prime
time. Like a sounding board?
Yeah, it's like a sounding board, and before he's really ready to go prime time with it. Mm-hmm. And so that's the function that I do for the business people.
So, Lee and I, we've been getting a lot of advice lately. Our company's growing, and we're starting to get a little attention. And I'm sure some of the advice we're getting is good.
Right.
It often conflicts. And I don't know. I mean, it's a little confusing about...
Yeah, we've been finding our trust advisors on, like, Craigslist. Maybe that's not appropriate?
The hot Brazilian might be a right. good one to start with.
We look on the back pages of, these kind of weeklies to find our trust advisors. Now, how do you find your clients?
Most of them are referrals, and they're in all kinds of different businesses. I mean, people say, well, are all the people that you work with automotive aftermarket, and they're not.
Because a business is a business, right? Like there's some
business
universal.
Is a business. I think all businesses, and this will sound strange too, but all businesses are very much the same. You have to create revenue. You have to control your expense, make a profit. You have to hire and retain good people.
Right.
They have to understand what the mission is and what you're trying to do. And then most importantly of all, they have to execute. So, I do business with people in automotive aftermarket, distributors in general, both industrial and all other kinds of distributors, multi-location retail, multi-location restaurants. One of my clients is a nightclub in New York City, which has absolutely nothing to do with any of the after, the
right.
ones that I mentioned before. But they're all businesses, and they've all got similar type of problems.
So how does an engagement start, and how long does it last? I guess just walk us through an engagement cycle, if you will.
Yeah, like what's the pain they're having in that they're like, I got to call you?
When I meet somebody who is wanting to talk about becoming a client, I will spend a full day with them, my expense. I don't charge them for my time.
So you had to go up to this New York nightclub?
Right. It was painful. I mean,
you got to do what you got to do.
So I'll spend a whole day with them. When what I'm looking for during that day is, do we have a personal connection? Because if you don't have a personal connection with somebody, you can't help them.
Sure.
The other thing I'm looking for is, are they willing to make significant personal and organizational change if that's what's required?
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of the day, it'll be pretty obvious to the client or I if we have a personal connection and if he is willing to make the kind of change that's going to be, you know, required. And so I'll say, here's four or five things that we can work with. If you're interested in continuing forward, here's the cost. Here's the way we do it. Or if there's not a connection or he really isn't willing to change anything, yet he wants his business to be different, I'll just kind of bow out gracefully and I'll say, you know, you've got a great business, but I don't think I can help you. But let's stay in touch and maybe something will open up.
Right. Can you share maybe some examples of how you've impacted some of your clients?
I've got a client that I was actually just at yesterday. And this client I started working with just after I left Genuine Parts. He's a manufacturing company. He does business with OE. And his original goal that we discovered working together, it's an old business. It's about an 85-year-old business. He wanted to double his business in 5 to 7 years, which is not an insignificant task.
Right. Does he need somebody that does background checks?
He does. As a matter of fact, one of the people he hired, he did not do a background check.
Wow, he's got some scar tissue from that.
He does have scar tissue. So we identified, you know, what his goal was, you know, and then we began to talk about what were some of the things that had to happen to facilitate it. He actually was successful. You know, he grew his business from about $75 million to $125 million in 2.5 years. So, and he did it all organically, no acquisition. So he reset the goal. Now his goal is to double it again in the next 5 to 7 years to $250 million. When he introduces me to his people, the first time that I ever went around with him to introduce to his staff, he wasn't sure how to introduce me. So the first thing he said is, "This is Larry Samuelson. He's my trusted advisor." And that felt uncomfortable. So the next employee, he said, "This is Larry Samuelson. He's my one-man board of directors." And in a very real sense, that's what a trusted advisor does. Because a trusted advisor, I also describe myself as a CAO, a chief accountability officer. Mm-hmm. So I make sure that the client who has said, "This is what we're going to do," I keep him on track. And in so doing, I make him accountable, but I make me accountable as well.
So do you see some of the same things over and over again, almost in every client, and you get there and you just about know, you know, these three things, I know that they're going to need some help on. Do you see some patterns?
You know, there's a number of things, and when we get into something that the client may need that's a functional level of expertise, like let's say he's got financial issues or he needs to do refinancing, I will bring in somebody that I work with who is a financial expert. You know, my expertise is I'm a generalist.
Right. I bring in specialists
because I'm not going to comment on something that somebody else can do better. But, you know, somebody may need to be financed better. Almost everybody needs, some sort of a mission. You know, they need to understand who is it that they are and what we're trying to do. They need to have a strategy, which periodically needs to be revised. And they need to have a staff and an organizational structure that will help them drive what they're trying to get done. So those three or four things are almost universal.
Now, you've expanded beyond this automotive aftermarket industry, though, right?
Right.
I mean, you mentioned that one nightclub, but isn't more and more your work kind of outside of that now?
It's probably 30% is still automotive aftermarket.
So if I invented some automotive aftermarket part, you could help me get it distributed?
Sure. Absolutely.
What do you have in mind?
I don't have one. But
you're just making idle conversations? This is precious airtime here.
You'd be a good person to know if I had that.
So I want to talk to you a little bit about developing this team of specialists. Because, again, talk about a great deal of trust. You have this client trusting you. Your reputation's on the line. You're bringing in a specialist. You must invest a great deal of energy in developing those relationships for those specialists. Can you talk about that a little bit?
That, you know, during, you know, 40 years of working, most of which is at a senior level, you meet a lot of people. Some are in advertising, you know, some are in, you know, background check sort of businesses. Some are in the cloud, like the gentleman behind me. But you have to kind of, you know, have almost a bench of people that you call upon that when you have a particular, and because you're putting your reputation on the line. You know, if the client says, "Well, gee, it seems like we need a really top-notch marketing person. Do you know anybody?" And if I don't,
now I do.
But if you don't, then you're really not bringing much value to the client. And so when you bring somebody in, you've got to be pretty well assured that that person can do exactly what the client is asking.
Because they're hiring you for that overarching solution. It doesn't have to be you providing the solution, just providing the resources that provide the solution.
Correct.
Yeah, I mean, he's like the quarterback. And I know as a business owner, I would rather go to one point of contact that I know is the guy who knows the guy. And it's not just his brother-in-law. I mean, he's worked with this person, vetted them. That, to me, that would be an incredible resource to have available to you.
You know, but probably the most important and the reason that the term is, you know, a trusted advisor rather than just an advisor is, you know, you have to work, I have to work very, very hard so that the client does trust me. And if there's not that trust, then all the things that should come out in the conversation won't come out. And so these relationships last a long time, really, you know, in some cases, almost indefinitely.
Right. So while your engagement may kind of turn on and off, the relationship probably lasts forever.
You know, the relationship lasts forever, and the relationship or the situations really never turn off or turn back on. They're continuous.
It's ongoing.
So with the clients that I have, I meet with each of them once a month for 8 to 10 hours. And people will say, well, what can you possibly find to talk about for 10 hours? And after I do it with a client, he says, boy, that time went fast.
Went fast, right.
And I said, the reason it went fast is we talked about the thing that's the most important to you. We talked about you.
Right.
And we talked about your business.
Right.
We didn't talk about me. We didn't talk about the cloud. We didn't talk about the marketing. We talked about his business and his people and in a lot of cases his family.
Right.
Well, you've certainly made the time go by fast this morning, Larry.
Thank you.
So let's get your coordinates, make sure folks know how to reach out to you. And it sounds to me like you want to continue to build relationships not only with prospective clients, but I suspect you're always on the lookout for strong, credentialed, trusted people to be available to you to help serve your clients. So let's make sure they can get in touch with you.
The website is thesamuelsoncompany.com. My phone number is 678-642-3756. One final comment, because it was kind of interesting. When I went off and decided to do this on a personal basis or an individual basis, I was trying to decide what to call the company. And, you know, I was trying all sorts of really creative things. And a fellow that I know pretty well said, you know, he said, no one's going to hire you or not hire you because of the name of the company. He said, your name has a certain amount of equity in the automotive aftermarket. Use your name. And so that's what I did.
And the supergroup was already taken.
And the supergroup and the hot Brazilians were already taken.
All right. Well, thanks to all of our guests here today. This is Lee Cantor for Stump Hayden. We'll see you all next week on Atlanta Business Radio.